Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to introduce our next guest, Mohammed Massaqua. Mohammed is an organizational psychologist. He is the founder of Vessel, and he is a former NFL wide receiver. And he brings a very rare combination to this conversation. He's got a very powerful personal story. He also has top-level education and expertise to go along with his top-level athletic and business experience. And he relies on that total package when he and his team work with their clients to simplify change through strategic alignment. And that change process doesn't just have to be business-related. It can be interpersonal, it can be intrapersonal, and beyond. And I'm really excited to share pieces of his story, his experience, his examples with everyone today, because we really can apply his philosophy and techniques across all aspects of our lives. And today he's going to get into so many great topics, including the process, the importance of differentiating between evolution and change, the importance of understanding the power of psychological contracts, the importance of making sure that we have complete and clear feedback loops, and understanding the power of change fatigue as well. He has so many great thoughts. I'm really excited to share them with you today. And thank you all for taking the time to listen. I truly appreciate it. Of course, before we go any further, we do want to take a quick minute to thank our sponsors. First, we have Humantel. You've heard us say it every time. Please head over to humantel.com and check out all of their research, all of their articles, all of their writing, understand where their techniques come from, and then dive into their training on how to understand the emotions that people are feeling and when those emotions are changing based on their facial expressions and body language. Once we understand that, we can unlock a wealth of intelligence in our conversations and relationships that make it easier to show empathy, develop rapport, and connect with other people. When you decide which training is right for you, please enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off of all the training available at humantel.com. Please also check out the International Association of Interviewers at certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can find all of their research, all of their resources, their education calendar, both online and in person. You can learn about their elite training day, all of their networking opportunities. And it's also where you can learn more about what it takes to qualify for the certified forensic interviewer designation, how to prepare for, sit, and pass the exam, and whether or not the designation is right for your level of expertise and your career aspirations. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the customized engagements that we design when clients reach out to us and ask us to work with their leadership team, their sales team, or their HR team to teach them the skills, techniques, and persuasive skills necessary to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences. All of that and more can be found at inquasive.com. Thank you all very much for being here again. We really appreciate you coming back every week to listen to these conversations. So now, without further ado, I introduce to you Mohammed Massaqua. Good morning, Mo. It is so great to see you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us today. How are you?
What's up, Michael? It's a good day. How's everything on your end?
It's going very well, very well. This will probably go live in January, I'm assuming, but it's getting to the holidays now. So it's kind of winding down a little bit, trying to keep my son in line and just enjoying the time with the family. I hope you are too.
I love it. How old's your son?
He's six.
Six. So he understands the holiday season and all the festivities.
Oh, he is all wrapped up in it for sure.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it is. It's great. And especially to see he and my wife together. It's a pretty special time of year for us. So it's awesome.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
So I appreciate you taking the time. Like I said, we've met once before. I had a chance to see you speak and I really appreciate you being here. So I know just a little bit about your story, kind of the overlap from the athletics to the business work that you do now and everything in between. And with the 60 minutes or so that we have today, I'd love to do as much as we can to share as much of your wisdom and experience with our listeners as possible. So at the risk of opening with a question you may have been asked 4,986 times in the last 2 weeks, if you had to say with Vessel, I believe most of the work you do now is really with strategic alignment and helping leaders and teams navigate through change and so forth. Yeah. With that backdrop, what would you say is the biggest lesson from your NFL career that you impart on your business clients today?
You know what's interesting is in playing sport, we are trained so well to have situational awareness of how to respond, not only how to respond as an individual, but how to respond as a collective unit, because you have almost harmony of 11 people at any given time, knowing where people are in space through situations, through urgency, through periods of the season. And once you figure out how to achieve that, you can really be more responsive than reactive. And in business, what happens a lot of times, people aren't always in alignment with each other, especially when they're changing. And there's a cost to that. Not only if you get a new leader or you're going through a merger or something's happened in the economy where you're trying to get 10, 20, 100, 1,000 people all to do the same thing at a given time, you start to realize that it's very hard to create desired outcomes in a moment of truth if you haven't stressed them prior to. And so we do a really good job of that in sport of stressing things before we have to execute so that it's muscle memory. And in business, it's about getting people to slow down to stress things so that when they have to respond, the muscle memory kicks into the desired outcome.
I love that. And one of the things kind of overlaps a little bit with what we do is trying to get people to address as many variables as reasonably possible before they get into the situation. So if I'm working with someone that's preparing for a negotiation or a client conversation or whatever, you know, human behavior is predictable. We have a relationship. Let's try to think this through. So I'm not trying to problem solve under stress, because that's going to lead to any number of decisions or things that I say or do that I wish I could have back. And so it sounds like you're really tracking the same way. And I love that expression of situational awareness, understanding where we are, who we're with in relationship to the goals we're trying to achieve, and what are the best decisions to try to get that group there now.
Exactly. And it's different. It could change from now. It could change to when this airs in January. If you remove or add one person to the equation, there's a number of factors that are taking place. And it's a lot of fun when you feel confident going into something that you've stressed as much as possible, or if you realize that this person is going to understand the decision that I make and we don't have to waste extra time, you know, whiteboarding or doing whatever to get this thing where we want it to go. And so it's a ton of fun, but people rarely spend the time to do it because they're so busy and they're so caught in the weeds. And then when they have to zoom out, nobody's on the same page. And that's very stressful. It causes a lot of disengagement. It wastes a lot of time, gets people burnt out. And so the more you can do on the front end, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah, I like to think of it as getting like caught on the hamster wheel. Like once you get start spinning on that, it's really hard to get off. And I've made that mistake where I got so far down the road thinking I had everything under control, realized I didn't. So now I have to put pause on everything. And how do I keep working on what's in motion while fixing, like taking that pause can be really hard for people to do. You said something that made me really curious in that initial statement that you made. I might misquote it. Responding versus reacting. Was that the illustration that you made? Can you explain the difference for us?
So reacting, it's new. It's like you know, it's almost like your animal instinct. It's whatever you're triggered with, you're going to do the first thing. Versus responding is almost like this premeditated, thought out, strategic, like intentional decision. And so one is just you know more the primate behavioral. I'm doing it. Flight or flight, you know, it is what it is, versus I'm in control of this situation. And this is what I actually want to do in this situation. And most people never get to a response because they're just reacting to stuff. And if you react to too many things, these things don't really build on top of each other. It's like the house of cards where things are just kind of broken and they're spread all over the place versus this is going to lead me to this. And I factored this in and that's going to lead me to that. And the more you can respond, you're aligned to your strategy versus just letting the chips fall where they may and trying to sort it out on the back end.
That's fantastic. And when I hear you say aligned to your strategy, that causes me to think about the difference between adapting and winging it. If I know where I'm going, I can adapt and I have focus points to get back to. But if I'm just winging it, now it becomes that house of cards and I feel like I'm making all the right decisions until I realize I'm nowhere near the goal I was trying to achieve.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't know how many people actually know if their strategy works or not, because whatever their strategy is, there's a lot of reaction to what's taking them, you know, day to day. And so you have all these different things and people think that they're going towards their strategy, but in reality, they're just doing their best to stay afloat. And so a lot of times the strategy is actually good. The execution is very poor because they're reacting to it. And when you're responding, you're trying to move closer in line to what you set out to become and where you want to go. But when you're just reacting to things, it's you're leaving it to chance, essentially.
Yeah. I love what you just said about the strategy might be good. The execution is the problem.
Exactly.
What are some of the more common challenges you find with your clients when you're trying to separate the process from the results?
Well, what are we actually supposed to be doing? Like, what is top of mind? If you look at any given day, people do a lot of low priority activities and it takes up a lot of time. And so if we can kind of strip that away, it's are we taking care of the big rocks or are we dealing with the pebbles? And, you know, the pebbles are all over the place. But what are these big boulders that we actually have to move in order to create progress? Or we're just kind of left with a lot of little things. And it feels like we accomplished a lot because it took up a lot of headspace. We were very busy, but we weren't really effective. And so trying to get clients to figure out what are the things that are top of mind? And it sounds very simple. These are the three things. These are the two things. This is the one thing that we're actually trying to do. But when you get a number of people in the room and you're trying to sort out, this is the thing, you start to realize how hard that actually is. And so the more you can strip away all the noise and get people focused in, I start to realize that it's people know how to do the job. What job to do at any given point in time is the challenging thing. And so it's not that people can't do something at a high level. It's just that they're doing too many things at a low level to lead into the most meaningful things.
I hope people just picked up on what an impactful statement that was. People know how to do the job. They're capable of doing it well, but knowing which job to do, and if I'm misquoting you, please forgive me, knowing what job to do or which job to do at the right time for the right reason becomes more challenging. So you're an organizational psychologist. From your perspective, not only with your experience, but with your education, what are some lessons we can learn to help get especially talented people focused on the right job at the right time?
Well, you think people, once again, is how you're communicating this. If every day, I got a buddy who's a project manager and he's like, I can build the thing you want. I just can't build everything all the time. And then the thing switch. Like you want a car that flies, that then is a submarine, that then does this, that then does that. And, you know, it just becomes more noisy and noisy and noisy. And so having somebody communicate a clean vision and actually iterating off of that vision versus changing the vision all the time, people get change fatigue. And when we think about some of the things that are what's very challenging in the workplace right now, from a lot of turnovers taking place, a lot of low engagement, a lot of trust in a strategy of the organization, a lot of people frustrated with their leadership because they don't see themselves in the future. They don't know how they're going to grow in the country, grow in the company. Like all these things are just a residual effect of not being clear of what we're trying to accomplish. And it's very, very frustrating to people. And so if you can communicate in simple terms of this, what we're doing, it starts to solve a lot of the other things of who do we actually need on the job from a talent acquisition standpoint? Who should we actually promote? Who's really good as an individual contributor versus who's actually a leader? Who are the people that have cross-functional skill sets that we can re-engage to say, hey, you're doing this job that you may be burnt out doing, but how can we bring your skill sets into other places to let you know that we value your whole being as a company, within the company? And so all these things are very, very like overlapped, but people think that they can just silo them or they can just add more work to the table. And that's just a very lazy way of setting strategy, which frustrates everybody in the end.
For sure. And by the way, before I forget, if your buddy figures out how to build a flying submarine car, I'd love to go with the rides. If you can put my name on the list of passengers, I'd appreciate that one. But getting back to your point, the clear vision and then iterating off of changing to me is extremely important. And I don't have the educational background that you do, but even from my perspective of understanding, it's easier for people to believe they're continuing an emotion they've already started, as opposed to feeling like they have to start over or go in a different direction. Ambiguity breeds stress, stress kills. So how do we create that clear vision and iterate from it was an incredibly powerful point. And also that piece about that lazy management. Well, I'm busy, so I'm going to dump this out on somebody else. Well, I have a new idea, so I'm going to change it. You know, taking that step back and really thinking that through is super important. There's a thread that I feel like has links a lot of these thoughts together, especially as it comes to communication and moments of change. And that is not only the ability to stay clear, but the ability to remain calm as well. And I'm curious, based on your professional athletic career, any techniques that you've learned or mechanisms that you've learned in order to help stay calm and think clearly in stressful situations?
I think it's two parts where you know the job that you're doing. And so I played receiver. Even if I take a step back, I was a professional athlete. And that's what people say, hey, you're a professional athlete, right? And yes and no. I was a professional wide receiver. And so not a professional basketball player, not a professional tennis player, not a professional quarterback, not a professional D-tackle, professional wide receiver. And so I was able to channel my efforts into this thing and try to become really good at it. Not to say that, you know, I couldn't have done other things, but I knew what my job was and what my organization needed me to do. And the better I did my job and understanding how my job fit into the overall strategy, I either contributed or I detracted from it. And so some of it is just knowing what is your job and what are you supposed to be doing and repping that over and over and over until you become really, really good at it. And there's like the joy of just competing with yourself, competing against the market to see how good you can get. But then if you look on a continuum, and sports is clean of we're trying to win a championship. In order to win a championship, we have to string so many good practices together so that we string so many good games together. And yes, there's going to be times you make good plays, you make bad plays, people get hurt, you win games, the conditions or whatever. But you understand if I do enough of these things along the way, once I get to the finish line, I have a higher likelihood of achieving my goal. It's very similar in business where, yeah, you may change opponents, but whatever you're doing should lead into like the big goal, the big picture versus, you know, one day we're trying to win the Super Bowl. The next day we're trying to win the Stanley Cup. The next day we're trying to win Wimbledon. The next day we're trying to build the fastest car. The next day we're trying to do this. Which is all too common of the target just changes in business and you don't actually know where you're supposed to be channeling your efforts, which becomes very frustrating. And so those would be the things of staying calm if you've done something so many times that it becomes muscle memory. And if you know that, hey, this one loss or this one outcome doesn't affect the greater good of what we're trying to accomplish. There's still a lot of game that we play to win the title, whatever you deem title worthy in your business.
Great points. And I'd love to piggyback on that concept of this one loss or this one bad play. I think in business, it can be really hard for people in business and family and life. It's hard with my six-year-old son. It's hard with the businesses I work with. When things don't go our way this time, to refocus, recalibrate, and keep working to get forward. I mean, we hear it all the time, right? Fail fast and setbacks are opportunities. Okay, we all get that. We see that all the time. But kind of, again, marrying your athletic and your organizational psychology background, how do you work with teams and business to continue to make that forward progress and understand that just because something didn't go so well today doesn't mean that that long-term goal still isn't very much in play?
I'll shift it a little bit. And I look at it, what's dangerous and what's risky. If you think about like, if it's dangerous, if this goes wrong, it's like, you know, life or death. If it goes right, yeah, you know, it's cool. If it's risky, if it goes wrong, you know, I can still play in the game, but if it goes right, there's a high upside. And making decisions off of that, you know, we'll get into it a little bit later, but you know, For me, I had a near-death accident, which was dangerous because I could have died, you know, game over. And then there's other things that I do that are risky where if it doesn't work, you know, it didn't work, no harm, no foul. And so being able to separate what is this thing that I'm in? Is it very dangerous if it doesn't go right? Which if that's the case, maybe I shouldn't do it at all. But is a risk to where, you know, there's some consequence to it. But if the outcome is what I want, you know, it's really right. And being able to kind of tease those things out when we're making decisions. So if something happens, we can live with the consequences of whatever's on the other side.
Great points. And I appreciate you mentioning your accident. It's a list of things that I'm nervous about asking people. I knew a little bit about your accident, so I want to be very respectful, especially with what you do now with change management and strategic alignment. I believe I understand that that accident not only propelled you in a different direction in life, but likely also helped propel you towards what you're doing now because of what you experienced, how you had to change and overcome. So can you share just a little bit, whatever you're comfortable with, of what you learned or experienced through that? And again, how you help people become better in their own business and personal lives based on your experience?
Yeah, so played 5 years in the NFL, retired, kept getting injured. So, you know, it's kind of the nature of the sport. Went into finance at Morgan Stanley afterwards. And so it was at Morgan Stanley for a few years. And while there, had a life-changing accident. Was riding an ATV. ATV ended up flipping, shattered my left hand to the point where it got amputated. And so just for context, I played receiver in the NFL. So my hands were very meaningful to me. And so losing a hand, you lose a part of your identity, you lose a part of your physical ability, you lose a part of yourself. And that has a host of emotions, emotional depression, anxiety, fear, like all the things that you would imagine that comes with that. It comes with some physical toll too, of phantom pain. You're going in and out of surgery, multiple of them. And so as I sit and I think people gravitate when I'm talking about change from like a lived experience from sports, but then just like the personal weight of going through something that shifts you. You marry that on with the education of, you know, industrial organizational psychology background, being able to take things that live in theory and live in the real world and marrying those two things together to say, I kind of understand this on multiple dimensions from a like just a human empathetic form, understand this from a sports form where we're probably one of the fast, high moving situations, you know, probably only second to the military where we're not in life and death situations, but where, you know, things are happening in real time. And then marrying that with the educational background, I think people have an innate trust that this just isn't living in, you know, like some fantasy world, that has kind of been vetted and it's been proven, and kind of using me as a reference point of, for sure, this person's been through something I trust that whatever's on the other side of this something is going to help me and my organization get through whatever we're dealing with and in the right way.
Well, I do appreciate you sharing that. Thank you very much. Am I correct in assuming that the industrial organizational psychology education was post-accident?
It was post-accident, and I'll tell you why. Coming from the sports world has, it's a mixed bag, because you get the, oh, what you used to do was really cool, and people kind of just, you know, park it there. They don't always trust that you are credible in other areas. And I had a guy that was in private equity, merging companies together, and he asked me, was I qualified to do the work? And I was like, huh, I've never really been asked that question. And I think it's something that people should ask of themselves. Am I qualified to do what I'm doing, and go answer those questions for themselves so that they never have that challenge later in life? And so for me, I wanted to make sure, if I'm going in a situation, not only do I understand this from a real world application, but I understand the foundation of it. And so I went back to Georgia, got a master's in industrial organizational psychology, went to the Harvard Business School, did a program that functions as their executive MBA, PLD. And so being able to look and say, these human decisions have a business impact too. There's a cost associated with them. And so how do I view that through the lens of, you know, the employees, the business leaders, what the business needs, what the human experience needs? What are the things that people may not be willing to talk about at all that you just have to factor in? There's a lot of leaders that are dealing with mental situations, physical situations that have a crossover effect into the job. And you're seeing through all these lenses. is never as clean as just, you know, do this and you get this outcome. There's a lot of factors that you may not even be able to speak vocally that you just know subconsciously I have to tackle.
All great points. I'm curious as to how your personal experiences helped the industrial organizational psychology education resonate even so much more. Like, I imagine as you were going through some of those courses and studying that work, being able to reflect upon your life experience helped it resonate more and probably made it easier. Maybe easier is not the right word. Either made it easier for you to teach others or made you more efficient in teaching others because you could relate to the material so much. Is that where that overlap really started to coalesce for you?
Yeah. What's fascinating? I tell people you should have a perspective. I have a perspective. Doesn't mean it's right or it's wrong, but being able to have a viewpoint that's uniquely mine, now adding other things to it, allows me to shape it in ways that other people can't. And so when I'm thinking about what is motivation, some people's motivations are different that may not show up on some type of aptitude test. Some people's viewpoint on the world of how they see things are different. Their cognitive abilities may come from different places. What they can contribute to a job or a workplace is a lot different. And so how you assess talent, how you assess a value add is very, very different from my lens. What is actually realistic and not realistic? There's certain things that are great theories, but once you try to apply them in real world situations, you just realize that a person's probably not going to respond like that. They're not going to respond like that if they've come through these situations. You start to realize that there's hidden traumas that people will reveal to me because, you know, they understand my amputation. And so I've had people that are like, hey, no one knows this about what I'm dealing with, but I want to share this with you. And that trust that I'm not going to use it against them, I'm not going to weaponize it. It builds connection across certain domains that maybe other people don't have. Because once again, the reference point of this person has something that they've gone through. I'm dealing with something that is impacting work that no one knows about. And it's those one-off silent conversations that happen in the classroom that now happen, you know, in the corporate office. And so it's, I would have maybe designed it a little differently. it's been somewhat of a icebreaker, is a fun way of, hey, you know, let's kind of strip away all the suit and tie jargon and let's get right to it. That's what I would say. It builds instant credibility to jump in, to deep in when you combine all those things.
Well, I imagine, you know, we know that trust is synonymous with vulnerability, and it's easier for other people to be vulnerable when you're vulnerable. And yeah, wouldn't it be great if there's another way to demonstrate that? But you being able to do that up front with audiences right away, I'm sure melts feet of ice if necessary in order to get your message across.
We're jumping right into it because I know regardless of how big and tough you are, regardless of what your position is, there's stuff there. I know from a mental standpoint, you may be overwhelmed. You're dealing with stuff at home. You may have anxiety. You may have depression. You may not know what you're doing. You may have imposter syndrome. And so I'm going to carry that for you. I'm going to let you know that I've dealt with all these things so that you don't have to beat around the bush and pretend. I'm going to let you know that these things have happened. And the more you can just kind of strip away that, and you don't give a person an out. You know, you're going to start with, are we at our potential? And the answer is no, because if you're at your potential, there's no need to be here. You know, you're probably dealing with someone that, you know, borderline narcissist. And so if we can kind of get off the table that we all have room to grow, you just break the ice. And now we figure out, what do we do to grow? And you start to invite people into the conversation. And it's not a, you're right, you're wrong, I'm right, you're wrong, whatever the case may be. It's, we're all in this together. And I'm rarely coming at it from an expert standpoint, like very rarely, unless somebody's asking me, what is your opinion on this? It's more collaborative. If we can combine all these skill sets across however big the group is, we can get the outcome that we want. And so you're sharing in this experience, you're sharing in who has the ownership of all of this, and you're doing it in a way where you're not sitting on this, you know, 30 foot, you know, corporate office, corner office type view. It's I'm in the trenches with you. You know, I'm in the trenches with you, and we're going to get out of this thing the best way we know how.
It's a tremendous perspective to have. And just for anybody in any leadership position listening, as you've said multiple times, everybody has their own burden, and that burden can change. It might not be the same every day or every week, but we all do. And just being cognizant and respectful of that can help strategic alignment and change management and organizational success. But more important, as you mentioned, human connection. As you were going through those two statements, I'm trying to keep in line all of the follow-up questions I wanted to ask, just listening to several things that you said that I thought were super important. One you mentioned was motivation. And I can imagine a lot of with what you do in the strategic alignment space involves motivation, but not that short-term, rah-rah, we feel good, okay, go motivation, but the type of motivation to help people and organizations commit to long-term initiatives and projects that are going to be a roller coaster ride. So understanding that we are all different and we are all motivated differently, what have you seen to be some of the more successful approaches in motivating teams and businesses over the long term?
I mean, that's a great question, because so many people treat motivation, I call it the give the kid an iPad, where you give them an iPad on a car ride, but then once you take the iPad away, you know, it the behavior comes back. And so you think that there's a lot of short-term solutions where people are trying to motivate. Maybe you give them an increase in pay, but then you haven't fixed the underlying problem. Maybe you throw like a pizza party or a happy hour or, you know, company function, whatever those things are. People are really jazzed up, but then you give them 24 hours and then they settle right back into it. But like fundamentally understanding, why is this person actually here? This person hopefully is here to create value. How can you help them create value? How do you help them understand where they're trying to create value? How do you set up a roadmap so they know that they actually have some longevity in the company? How do you compensate them fairly? Doesn't mean that they're like the highest paid person in industry, but how do they perceive that they're being treated fairly in the organization is very important. Do they have feedback so that they know that they're doing a good job? They feel like their manager, leader is going to go to bat for them. Is there enough of a healthy culture to where they feel safe and they don't feel like anybody's going to weaponize anything against them? Is their work rewarding? Are they actually doing the work that they want to be doing? Are they doing work that's meaningless, that's not going to show up anywhere? And so all these things are systems that actually help the company achieve the business result that they want to achieve. And it starts with these individual employees of helping them actually self-select in to be there, and knowing what they're self-selecting into. And I don't say one culture is better than the other, but it's allowing people to know. There's an organization here in Atlanta where I'm at, and a leader literally, like on the job descriptions, you're gonna get a chance to work on really exciting projects, but know that you're gonna work extra hard, and sometimes you may work over, and they're upfront with that, and people love that. It's almost like sport where, hey, sometimes you're going to be tired. Sometimes you're going to be injured. You're going to have to perform under pressure. You're going to have to play, you know, on holidays. You're going to, like, people are self-selecting into that thing. And then there's certain people that what they thought they were going to get out the experience, they're not actually getting out. And so the company is like misaligned in their messaging. And there's no way that you're going to motivate those people because they feel like they've been duped. And so the more clear you can be upfront with individuals and then actually be accountable to what you told them, you have more of an opportunity to keep them motivated. And then how is that leading to success? Like, are you communicating, hey, Mike, this led to that, you know, thank you for that. Not only am I appreciative of you, I'm gonna continue to give you more opportunities to show what you do, and I'm gonna reward you for that. And we want you here in the long term, and you're gonna be able to grow. Like, people feel like they're a part of the company versus just kind of clocking in and clocking out.
I love that. And second reference to clarity and the importance of clarity in the messaging. And then earlier you mentioned iterating on that clarity. And here's an example of providing clarity to help people appreciate and understand what they've contributed, why, and what it is adding to. So it's not just one piece of one project or one communication or one problem solved. Great job doing that. Tie that into the greater strategy, the greater goal, and then that follow-up piece are going to continue to rely on you. I think that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you could watch a game and it could be the first quarter and you could tell somebody that has shifted the momentum of the game. And you can, like, everybody can string back and say, like, this, this block right here was the thing that shifted. And it could be a person that's a seventh, eighth person on the bench. And so it's not about a job title thing. It's not about a who's paid the most. It's like who's actually helping push this thing forward and how can we recognize them and continue to put them in positions where they do more of that and feel like they're a valuable member of the team.
That was a great example. And see if I can tie this together in a way that makes sense, at least in my head. I have no doubt that in sports, high level Division I collegiate sports and professional sports, there have been times where somebody walked into a locker room and people look at each other and they're like, what is that dude doing here? But then flash forward, that person makes a huge play in a critical moment and propels the team to a game win, a playoff win, a championship, whatever it may be. I'm assuming in your business work as well, there's been times where a group of people have been sitting in a conference room and they're, well, why is that person here? What are they doing here? Then that is the person with the important contribution somewhere in the meeting that unlocks an alternative, solves a problem, brings everything together. So I would love your perspective on this. Earlier, you mentioned talent identification. When you are looking for potentially hidden talent or unlocked talent in somebody, what are you looking for that kind of sets off the alarm for you that says this person might have talent or skill or ability that currently isn't getting recognized or utilized?
I'll give you different examples. There was a company going through a digital transformation and the CEO is kind of like flipping through the iPhone. The CEO calls the assistant in, the assistant comes in, they're in their mid 20s. Assistant talks about, you know, finds whatever's on the iPhone. And I'm just sitting there looking and the CEO's like, the damn iPhone. And I'm like, you don't, like, there's something that just happened here. Call this assistant back in and ask them what they know about this digital transformation that you're about to go through. Assistant spews brilliance. And I'm like, either this is a one-off or either this person has like true insight and they actually fit the demographic that you're going to market to, that you're going to build this project for. Now they can't get it from point A to point Z, but they have a viewpoint that's well-informed of how this thing should work. And you probably have other members of the organization that fit the same bill where they're doing work, where they're only able to leverage a slice of their skill set. But if you bring them in and you start to interconnect all these different insights, you actually build the organization from the inside out. You don't need anybody external. You have these capabilities internal. And so you start to build these cross-functional teams. Wow, a person can still do their job, but they're able to contribute in other areas. It's like if a turnover happens, while it's not in my job to go tackle, it's in the team's best interest to go tackle if there's an interception or if I fumble. It's in the team's best interest for someone to try to recover the ball. It's you understand where the value's at in real time. And then there was another organization where they were trying to figure out how to similarly their internal capabilities. A lot of these people weren't from the U.S. and they had a different way of viewing problems from wherever they were from. And they started to realize that the demographic that they were going after in the U.S. was very similar to the skill set that they had within their organization. And so they started to leverage more of the insights that these individuals had internally to solve a problem that was in the U.S., but the consumer base was more international. And so it was very fascinating to like allow them to say, what in your past, what in your lived experience is actually going to map on well to how y'all drive your sales strategy, to how you drive your customer engagement, to how you shape how the business should function here. And it's literally just basically spotlighting and putting a map on, this is happening well here. It seems like a one-off, but we can build from this. And it's not the, what can you do? Like the things that you may be able to do in theory don't, you know, where can we see that this is actually living and bring it to the forefront and help make it a deeper part of your job.
Which ties back to the word perspective. And earlier you mentioned that you like to be someone that has a perspective and provides that perspective, and it's just one. But it's also realizing that we are in life surrounded by rooms and buildings and networks of people who have their own perspective. And that perspective can be extremely valuable to us at unexpected moments. And I think we often find what we're looking for. So if we believe that, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, if you put me with a bunch of athletes, we're probably going to, like, if I'm watching a football game, with my friends, we're probably going to see things very similarly. If I put you in the room with me, you're going to pick up on different nuances. If I put you in a room with a bunch of negotiators, y'all probably think similar. You put us together, we're going to see problems differently. And if we work well together, which is, part of the cultural piece, I'm going to trust that your insights, I'm not going to challenge those. I'll challenge them to refine them, but I'm not going to try to win. I'm going to try to figure out how do we build on top of each other so that we come up with something that's greater than any of us could produce on our own.
Love the example. And for a second, if I could take it back to sports, I imagine that often, I can think back to my experience, which is 100 levels below yours, but there's times where we have to come together as a unit to get people to improve how they're performing. They have more potential. They need to see something differently. They need to approach a problem differently. So I'm going to take a guess that I imagine that not only did you have that experience in athletics, if I recall correctly, because I am a college football fan, could have never played it. I remember watching you at Georgia, and I'm pretty sure you were captain of that team, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. So even taking that experience of getting teams to unify is not the word I'm looking for, but instead of my brain exploding trying to come up with a better word, I'm going to go with that now. Those unification techniques to try to, that rising tide lifts all boats type mentality. How do you work with business teams to get that across that point and that goal accomplished as well?
The difference is we're highly accountable in sports because the feedback loops are so clean. You make a good play, you get a cheer. You make a good bad play, you may get a boo. You do something to cost your team. And when you come back, the debrief session is very clean where you're going over every practice, every play. And so there is no vague gray area. There are no moral victories. You either did or you didn't do. And you're getting feedback on how you did, not who you are as a person, not if I like you. It's based off how you contributed to whatever. And that accountability sometimes is lacking where people get away with things that aren't in the best interest of the team. And so the more you can help people build the trust to help hold each other accountable, whether it's the CEO or the first day person, and be comfortable in, it's not an attack on who you are as a person. It's once again, have we hit our potential? No. And so what are the things we can do to kind of make progress on that? If a CEO is making decisions that aren't in the best interest, how do you safely help get that person? If you have a workforce that isn't doing what they're supposed to do, how do you safely get them to where they get to? And the more you can build that accountability, close those feedback loops of how people know how they're doing on any given task and giving them the support to continue to improve, you start to look for it, because if you have an organization that's very competitive and wants to do well, you're seeking out, how do I become a better player? How do I become a better consultant? How do I become a better negotiation? These aren't bad things. You hopefully have someone that you can trust that can say, hey, Mike, in this situation right here, you might want to do this. Hey, Mo, in this situation right here, this would be better. And I'm going to accept that from people I trust. Someone I don't trust, that may challenge it. It may be a lot more tension. But that's the reason the trust and the culture piece is so important, to be able to have those communication lines open and actually receive what's on the other side.
Great illustration. And I love the way you said clean feedback loops. To me, that makes so much sense. I imagine at the highest end of athletics, the feedback loop is so clean because people aren't as concerned about everybody's feelings as they are more concerned about the goals we all committed to doing. And once someone has made it to that level, they likely have already put their feelings in a bag and closed that up in their locker, and they're here and they're committed. It isn't always true that way in business. It's probably very rarely true that way in business, where people's feelings are a lot more involved and they are a lot more emotionally connected and potentially vulnerable. So as you transition from the highest level of athletics to working with people at the highest level of businesses, how have you seen people very successfully clean up that feedback loop while creating that safety that you speak of and not kicking off some of these negative emotional reactions?
Well, it's I think Ray Dalio has it where they're like radical transparency, I think they've built that culture at Bridgewater. I don't think that that works everywhere because, you know, where from how I understand it, anyone can say anything. It is. I wouldn't advise, you know, someone just going to tell their CEO how they feel. You got to be a little tactful in it. But once again, I think these things build over time to where as you add value and you can say certain things that help a person, you start with low hanging fruit and you just continue to move and you understand when to do it. You may not call a person out in front of everyone because that may not be the right thing. You may do it after the meeting, or you may send a note, or you may go through someone else that has the ear of someone else. And so you have to be tactful in how you get it, but the organization has to understand that this is what's happening. I have certain friends that if they're about to give me certain information, they may preface it to say, "Hey, Mo, this is going to come in hot. I want you to brace yourself." And I know that this isn't an attack on me. It's something that they're trying to get across that I may not always like gel with. And the ability to receive that in a way that is coming from a place of love, is coming from a place of care. But you, once again, you have to communicate that's what's happening, because if somebody just comes and calls me out and I'm not expecting it, there may be a little, you know, defense that goes up. But if you can kind of prep the organization that we're moving in this direction, this is what we're trying to do, safely doing it, illustrating it from the top to where a person sees that everybody is in this together, it's helpful. It's I'll use the sports analogy again. It's like when a player comes to the sideline and they're talking with the coach, even though the coach is theoretically has it's higher in position, the person that's leading the ship, that two-way communication of this is what I'm saying. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. And they've come to this agreement that's in the best interest of everyone, not just this one individual. And so things that feed the organization and push the organization forward, understanding that who are the players involved to help like illustrate this and architect this and giving them feedback loops that are promoting everything forward.
Thank you. I'm going to summarize something to see if I understand it the way that you meant it. I think I do, but I'm really good at being wrong sometimes. So I'm trying to clear it up. One of the things I thought I heard you say was earn trust over time in order to really earn the right to give some of this feedback at the right time to the right people. Did I catch that?
Correct. Because if I don't know you, we're getting to know each other, and I say, "Hey, Mike, this is whatever," I give my opinion, you're going to be like, "Who's this random guy that's telling me how I should do whatever?" But if we do this and we have like this experience where we get to know each other, now there's safety and there's trust built up to where I can share something and you're going to receive it from where I'm actually coming from versus the knee-jerk reaction of whatever, you know, your first response is.
I love that. And I think a lot of times it's, for people at any level in the organization, it's natural for them to feel like they should have more of a say, they should have more impact, they should be able to voice themselves freely. And I would agree, they should, but that's not always the way it works, for good and bad reasons. You know, there's an argument to be had either way. But if we sit back and say, okay, I want to have a greater voice, I want to be of more influence, I want to have a better seat at the table, I want people asking my opinions in these situations, well then, okay, how do we start playing, and I say rhetorically, but how do we start playing the long game? And how do I look for little problems to contribute to and ways to support people and ways to offer a thought at a time to the right person? So that way I'm building that trust equity over time. So to your point, when I really do have that impactful moment and I want to jump in, I've now earned the right for it to be more likely to be perceived how I meant it and have the impact I'm looking for.
Yeah. In the org psych world, we talk about organizational citizenship behavior, and it's the things that are outside of your job description that add value to someone else. And so maybe you need something that helps you do your job better and I do that for you. Or maybe you need an insight, or maybe you're having a bad day and I help. You know, all these things continue to build trust and equity over time, and they're for the good of the organization. And so the more we can do that is just keep adding value, I think is helpful. And then understanding that I may have a viewpoint on everything, but my viewpoint isn't needed on everything. Where coach calls a play, yeah, I want it to be a pass play, But it's a running play. So what? You know, like, we're not going to throw every play, and nor am I going to catch every ball. And so you start to realize, where do I fit into this thing? And sometimes I just have to be okay, once again, with my leader setting the vision. And as a leader, that takes more accountability on you to set a vision that is going to factor everybody in and help get them to where they want to get to ultimately, where the organization is going.
That's a fantastic example. Organizational citizenship behavior. I love that. From your education, are there other organizational psychology examples like that that we should be aware of and aspiring to fall in line with?
I mean, I think the simple one is just like the psychological contracts that we're making. These are the things that people are assuming comes with being a part of these organizations, these companies. And it's not like you're not signing it. It's not, you know, it's just understood that if I come here, that the organization is going to take care of me. It's going to protect me. It's going to have my best interests. I'm going to be able to grow. I'm going to be compensated fairly. Like, these are things that people expect when they get in the organization. The problem is those aren't always true. Like, how many people are in companies that they thought it was going to be one way, they were promised this was going to happen, and one side or the other isn't holding up their end of the bargain? And if companies just lived out their values and lived out their mission statement, I think so much good could happen. The challenge is that doesn't always happen, and that causes a lot of tension. And so just being who you say you are supposed to be, whatever that psychological contract is, owning that, and I think a lot of people will be on the right side of that.
For sure. And that goes back to clarity. Are we being clear up front with some of those contracts? If they change, sometimes for good reasons or necessary reasons, are we clear about that? And hopefully by eliminating the ambiguity, we can have more of that alignment that we're working towards.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I probably have waited too long to ask you this, because I know so much of what you do is giving people the tools necessary to thrive through change. So I would love to just ask you, to the degree that it makes sense to share in this conversation, what are the things that people and teams should be doing to survive through change, whether it is unexpected or whether they have the opportunity to plan for it?
I think it's understanding what you're trying to accomplish. And that is so broad and it's so generic, but what business are you actually in? Like, what is, I think Clayton Christensen, like, what is the job that you're actually doing? Like, what are you doing? That helps even in ambiguity. Like, if I know I'm playing football, I kind of can fill in a lot of those blanks for myself. No one has to tell me that. If I'm in strategic alignment, yeah, there may be some things that are overlapped in that, but I'm never going to be trying to do, you know, be the person that's your IT person. Like, that's outside of my core competency. And the more that I go outside of my core competency, it just becomes dangerous for a lot of people. I'm never going to be telling the person how to negotiate. I was asked once on how to handle communication for a challenging situation. I was like, I can't help you there, because I don't know. And so the more that you know what you're doing, the more that you can help people, not necessarily give them a playbook, but give them an understanding of what they should be doing, what is top priority. That way they know, when in doubt, I should start focusing my efforts to these particular things right here. And then, ironically, once you start doing those things, giving people autonomy, and I think they will surprise you, because if I'm constantly telling you how to do things, I'm restricting your creativity. I'm restricting your viewpoint. I'm restricting maybe some of the innovation that you have baked in that could help the whole system. And then those feedback loops are important, so that people understand that either we're making progress, we're not making progress, we're stagnant, so that we know either to continue to push the gas forward or where we're supposed to be going, would be like the high level, simple things that I would kind of pull off the hip.
They're all high level, not necessarily super simple in practice, but all very impactful. Very impactful for sure. And I love when you said, if there is a doubt, I at least know what to do, or at least know what direction to go in. Because I imagine for most people and most teams and most leaders, there are moments of doubt. I'm not sure what to do first, what to do next, what is the best next step. But a step is the right step. I've got to make some sort of forward progress. I've got to do something. So if in that moment of doubt, I'm living my values, I understand what the mission is, I understand what the goal is, and I'm strategically aligned, then if I'm playbook, guidebook, whatever phrase you want to use, if I'm moving in that direction, then I'm more likely to be creating a successful outcome.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting when people think about change, there's not as many changes as people think. I think some things are more evolution than just like wholesale transformation. The AI revolution. Yeah. Like it's coming, but can people act on that like right now? No, they're going to have to build those capabilities. They're going to have to get the right talent in. They're going to have to train their people. They're going to have to understand how it fits into everything. And so we're really going to be evolving to that over time. It's not we're going to have it figured out in 2024, 2025. We're just going to continue to make progress. So you're able to shift people's mindset and to start moving towards that. It's not really like a change. Like it's the urgency of it has to happen now. But if we can continue to set vision for this is where we're moving, this is where we're going, we get people to slowly start to move forward. And some people have to move faster than others, but the speed, the urgency, the who's actually involved right now, what has to happen, I think that gets muddied up in how people communicate, and they create a lot of tension that won't be realized anytime in the immediate future. But the clarity around, once again, of this is where we're going. We're going this direction. Like, and this is what we need people doing. Now I know that this other thing over here, whether I like it or not, I'm eventually going to have to move. And you give a person, once again, the opportunity to self-select in and take ownership of, I either want to be a part of this or I don't want to be a part of this. And that is the clarity that a lot of leaders aren't giving people to understand it, because they still think that they're doing other things because the communication hasn't been like crystal clear of, no, we're doing this and I'm going to provide the support for you to get there. And this is the realistic time frame. And there's a lot of things that we can't control in the interim that we need you to help be a part of the solution for.
Back to clarity, full circle. How about that? About an hour in, all the way back through. I love it. And so true on so many levels. I know you're busy. I can't thank you enough for making the time for this conversation. You have given us so many impactful thoughts, so much value, such great perspective. There have to be people listening right now that thinking, I need to connect with Mo. I need to find out more about what Vessel does, the type of organizations that they help, maybe have Mo come and present to one of my groups or speak at one of my events. So for the people that are interested in learning more about you and Vessel, can you tell us just a little bit more about what specifically you do and where people can find you?
So our job is strategic alignment through change. We try to simplify that. And the approach is, what is the top thing that we're supposed to be doing? What is the second thing that we're going to make progress on? What's the third thing that you should be aware of? Anything outside of that, you start to confuse people. And so we're really trying to simplify this to give leaders a toolkit that they can actually go act on immediately. Like next week, you can go implement this is our whole approach. And so the website is the Vessel, thevessol.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's my name. I should be the one to pop up, or you'll find my dad and he'll forward it to me. He gets enough of those calls. But in a world where leaders don't have a lot of time, they don't always have a lot of resources, they don't always have a lot of headcount to where they can draw these things out long, and there's usually some sort of urgency to it, that's where we can come in and add some value very quickly and really leverage the institutional knowledge of what's already within the organization to transform it from the inside out. So we enjoy it. We think we're pretty good at it. And we feel like, you know, we add a lot of value to individuals.
No, there's no doubt about that. And like you said, by harnessing that institutional knowledge, it's not necessarily so much change as it is evolution. It's the next step, how we grow, where we get there, and how we do it as an organization.
Yeah. I mean, if it's coming from internal, now you don't need my methodology. You don't need someone from the outside. You can go and say, hey, Michael was the one that came up with this insight. There's an organization where they were trying to figure out a process that one leader already had within their division, and it was flawless. The problem was no one else knew that this was existing. It was just kind of in their thing. And so it's like, we don't actually need to figure out how to recreate this process. It's already living within the organization. We just have to figure out how do we share it and implement it. And so it's finding those things that are taking place already within the organization that now the change isn't so big. It's no, so-and-so's already proven this. It's in the language. It's in the compliance that we need. And the more you can find that and you change the organization from within, the more it's sustainable, the more that when I have a problem, I know who to go to, the more that it all the things that you would hope for versus living in like research theory or someone's loose opinion of, you know, that doesn't hold any weight.
That's a perfect example. Perfect. Well, thank you again so much. It is great to see you, especially this time of year. I know there's so many things going on. You carved out an hour for us this morning. I'm truly thankful for it. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season with your family, a safe and happy new year. And I wish you nothing but continued levels of success with everything that you're doing and all you're giving back to so many people and organizations. Thank you.
Likewise, my friend, always good to see you. Keep up the great work. Look forward to our paths crossing again.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.
Mohammed, thank you very much for a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you being open and sharing your experience with your hand injury, what you learned, how it affected you, and where you came from. I think even just showing your transition from athlete to finance to vessel, your education, becoming an organizational psychologist, that sets such a great example for so many people. And of course, the power of what you teach, the power of how you interact with people, help them navigate these uncertain times with your strategic alignment and approaches. It really is, for me, from the outside looking in, it really is an amazing alignment between your business and athletic expertise, your own life lessons and approach, and of course, everything you've learned through your education. Thank you so much for sharing it with us all today. I truly appreciate it. And to everyone who listened to the conversation, thank you for being here. And hopefully you found just as much wealth in everything that he had to share with us today. It was a great conversation. I appreciate you being here for it. Of course, you want to thank our sponsors out the way out the door. Head over to humantel.com. Enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off of their best-in-class online training to how to accurately identify what people are feeling and when those emotions changed based on evaluating their facial expressions and changes in their body language. That's over at humantel.com. Head over to certifiedinterviewer.com for the International Association of Interviewers. That's where you can learn all about the resources, the network opportunities, the member benefits, all of their education events online and in person. And of course, that's where you can find out if you qualify for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation and begin to realize what that designation can do for your career and your journey as well. And while you're at it, please head over to inquasive.com. And that's where you can learn more about all of the customized presentations that we put together for our clients when they ask us to develop sessions for their leadership teams, for their sales teams, and for their HR teams to teach them how to maximize their observation skills and their persuasive communication skills for encouraging people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances and in the face of consequences. All of that and more at inquasive.com. If you're enjoying these conversations and you'd like to learn more about the disciplined listening method, the research, the techniques, the examples, how to apply it across our business and personal lives, you can head over to either Amazon or Barnes & Noble's to buy a copy of the book, The Disciplined Listening Method. We really do appreciate all of your time and support. Thank you for continuing to watch and listen to these conversations. Please take a couple extra seconds, subscribe to the show, like the show, share it with your friends. Please share your feedback with us. What do you like? What do you not like? What would you like to hear more, see less of? Please let us know your feedback so we can integrate it and give you more of what you like moving forward. We really appreciate it. Mohammed, thank you again to everyone who joined us. Thank you so much. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.